welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levenier, and this hour, mystery stories from two programs later on, an episode of Mystery House. But first, it's Larry Thor portraying Detective Danny Clover on Broadway Is My Beat. This CBS broadcast first heard on February 3rd, 1950.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway. It's a mob and a big voice that darts out from doorways and screams in your face, then skirls off into the quiet streets. It's a panic in neon where misery and packaged pleasures are commodities, sometimes on installments. It's a place that dares you, and one way or another, it'll rock you to sleep. It's Broadway, My Beat. Early on a January morning, you get up and turn on the heat against the cold of the day. Then there's coffee in the newspaper, the warming things to buffer your shivering at the thought of going out of your own world. I didn't have it that good. I didn't have time for the coffee and newspaper. A call came. It said, get down to St. Anthony's Hospital. I did, and the nurse, the nun at the information desk, said since Sister Angela was waiting for me right over there. Sister Angela?
Yes. Yes, in the room.
I'm Danny Clover. Headquarters said there was some trouble about a man's dying.
About Jimmy dying. Jimmy Hunt. Mistake.
Jimmy was a patient here at the hospital?
Yes.
And he died. Then I don't see the police.
The manner in which he died, Mr. Clover. Father Flaherty said it must be reported to the police. Jimmy committed suicide with a steak knife off of his food tray.
I see. He was that sick.
No. No, he wasn't, Mr. Clover. Jimmy had been a soldier. He fought in a war. And he was having trouble forgetting about it. But that's all that was wrong with Jimmy. This is his room. Father Flaherty. This is Mr. Clover, Father. From the police.
Hello.
Hello, Father.
Suicide is always deplorable, Mr. Clover. And to attend death with the police, even more so. However...
I understand, Father. This is Jimmy. He was found like this?
Yes. The attendant found him.
Fred Owen, the attendant's name. Owen found him and called me.
I'd like to talk with Fred Owen, Father.
Of course. Sister?
I must say that's impossible, Father. Fred must have gone home for the day. Finding Jimmy dead by night undoubtedly made him ill. Fred is very sensitive, Father.
Oh, surely. Did Jimmy have any visitors?
Yes. I have them here, Mr. Clover. A list. I called to tell them of Jimmy.
If you don't mind, sister.
Yes, yes. I don't understand.
Routine, sister. Simply to complete a file.
Is that all, Mr. Clover?
A few more things. I want the attendant's address.
Of course.
And a question. Could anyone at all, attendants, visitors, anybody, could someone have come in here and murdered Jimmy?
What are you saying?
Please.
Yes, it could have been done, Mr. Clover. What are you getting at?
Jimmy was stabbed in the side too close to his back to make him a suicide. Jimmy was murdered. You can say rights now, Father. A man who has slept on the beaches of death so many times is struck down finally in the ultimate screeching brutality of violence. And a nun's silent, gentle hands, the whispered chant of a priest, try to ease the pain of his journey into the shocking chasms of darkness. All a cop can do for the man is to find out why he had to die in this way. So the cop calls at the address of one named Fred Owen, finds him not at home, hasn't been home, don't know when he'll come home. Then the cop sends out an all-points bulletin on one named Fred Owen. Then the cop calls on the first of a murdered man's visitors list.
Who is it?
It's Danny Clover of the police.
You're here about Jimmy? Please come in.
The girl was slender, her face delicate with an almost wistful expression. But it was her eyes, gray and soft, as if the color had been strained through gauze.
Please sit here.
Thank you.
They called me from St. Anthony's. They told me about Jimmy and Mr. Clover. They told me.
Then you're Virginia Scott.
Yes. I'm glad you came to me, Mr. Clover, because I can tell you things about him no one else knew, not even the doctors. I understand why he killed himself. Shall I tell you why?
Jimmy didn't commit suicide, Miss Scott. He was murdered.
Who would do that to my poor lost Jimmy? Jimmy.
Miss Scott.
Jimmy was brave. He was kind and innocent. He was my child and my love. All he ever did wrong was to get lost.
Will you help me find his murderer, Miss Scott?
Yes, yes.
Who would kill him?
Who kills Mr. Close? Who searches out a wounded boy and kills him? Are there such people?
How long have you known him?
We met at a dance. His company was going overseas. I didn't know anyone there, but Jimmy asked me to dance, and I fell in love with him.
He kept in touch with you?
Every day. We wrote to each other every day.
Did he ever mention anyone in his letters? Anyone who could...
Hated him? Who wanted to kill him? Yes, Mr. Clover. All the nameless ones who had to kill other nameless men. He was a soldier.
Oh, Virginia, I...
Don't. Don't try to find the words, Mr. Clover. The words that heal pain. Are there such? You can do one thing for me, though.
Anything.
The letters I wrote Jimmy in the hospital, they were love letters. Every day I couldn't visit him, I wrote him one. May I have them?
Letters? There weren't any.
What? But they were all I could ever give Jimmy. I know he'd keep them. They have to be there.
I'll find them, Virginia. I only ask this. I know you'll understand. Why didn't you marry Jimmy?
Why? Why burden him more? Didn't you notice, Mr. Clover? I'm blind.
She said it gently and smiled and offered me her hand. Then I left. Then I found a crowd and walked into it and stuck with it. That way I could clutter my mind up with other faces. After a while, I put my hand in my pocket and took out a piece of paper. It had names on it and addresses. Under Virginia Scott's was a man's name, Mickey Bianco. The address was a pool room on 16th Street off 8th Avenue. Where do I find Mickey Bianco?
You're in my way.
Oh, sorry. Nice shot. You should play for money.
I'm Mickey Bianco, mister.
You know Jimmy Hunt?
You like that shot?
I'm quivering with excitement. Where'd you know him from? The Army?
Yeah, the Army. Where I picked up an 8-ball and parlayed it into a 2-table pool room.
About Jimmy Hunt. I'm from the police.
Oh? What about Jimmy Hunt? What do you want about him?
Did you kill him?
He dead? Dead, huh? You sure, huh? Jimmy Hunt, dead. Lieutenant James Hunt, a civilian casualty. Hip, hip, hooray.
Makes you patriotic.
Yeah, like the Lieutenant Hunt taught me. Be patriotic. Point yourself forward at the enemy when you die, men. That's what he said to us. He meant it.
You were in his outfit.
Sure, his platoon. We were murdered being patriotic at Eniwetok. But not the lieutenant. Not me either. Everybody else, but not us. Fortunes of war.
Did you visit him at the hospital?
It was my pleasure, believe me. Oh, don't pat me on the back and tell me I was fine. Just fine for going to see my old lieutenant. You know why I went? I made him feel worse. I reminded him about what he did to his platoon. That'd make him pull his knees up to his chest. I like to watch.
Yeah. Did you see any letters just lying around the room? Letters addressed to Jimmy when you visited him.
Letters? What letters? Uh-uh. But that other question, did I kill Jimmy? You know, I should have thought of doing it, but I didn't. Hand me the chalk, policeman.
The shaded lamp that hung over the pool table gouged a cone of saffron light out of the shadows. And trapped in the twist of light were frayed banners of smoke, and whispers, and aimless dust. And the silhouetted outline of Bianco's face and hands.
then the sharp click of wood on ivory, the pleased titter spilling out of Bianco's mouth. This, too, can be the requiem for a dead man. It stayed with me all the way to headquarters, where a report was to be filed, where questions were to be asked. And questions you ask of Sergeant Tartaglia. Sometimes he has answers.
The answer to that one is in the positive negative, Danny.
Be kind to me, Tartaglia. Sometimes I don't understand things, especially on an empty stomach. What is a positive negative?
Oh, easy. Positively, we have found no trace of Fred Owen. The reports from the boys looking for Fred Owen are negative. This makes valid the use of the double...
What about the letters? The letters that Virginia Scott wrote to the boy in the hospital. Have you found them?
No, Danny, we haven't found the letters. We searched the effects of the deceased. We checked with Sister Angela, with Father Flaherty. No letters. Does it make a difference, Danny?
Danny Clover speaking.
I'm sorry to bother you.
Well, I told you any time, Virginia.
Something strange has happened. A phone call just came, and a voice said I would die.
What?
It said if I didn't want to die, I'd better get some protection. What does it mean, Mr. Clover?
It means lock the doors and bolt the windows. I'm coming right down.
Danny!
Get a squad car, Tartaglia. Don't stand there. Get it! Me, Virginia. Open the door.
You came so quickly, Mr. Clover.
Has anyone...
No, there's been no one. I've just been sitting here, listening to the sounds of the street. You know, Mr. Clover, when night falls, it has a sound. Oh, shall I turn on the light?
No. Is there any other entrance to this apartment?
Yes, the kitchen. It has a door that opens onto the hallway.
Is it locked?
Yes. You told me, Mr. Clover.
I'll unlock it.
What?
It'll be all right, Virginia. We'll leave this one open, too. Where were you sitting?
Over here, near the window.
Sit there now. I'll stand over here.
Why would anyone want to kill me, Mr. Clover?
I don't know. Maybe because you're all that's left of Jimmy.
If they want to kill me, why did they tell me to get protection? It doesn't seem logical, does it?
Maybe it's not...
Shh. Why? I hear someone, Mr. Clover.
Don't move.
Mr. Clover? He's heading for the fire escape at the back, Mr. Clover. I can tell by the sound.
You'll have to come with me, Virginia. I can't leave you here.
Hold my hand.
There he is, down at the bottom of the fire escape.
He got away, didn't he, Mr. Clover? In a car, he got away.
Yes, Virginia, he got away.
Give me your hand, Mr. Clover. Suddenly it's darker than it's ever been.
You're listening to Broadway's My Beat, starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
There's this about Broadway. It is a bag full of free illusions. In every color, every size, guaranteed against fading, warranted against shrinkage. Want an illusion, kid? Just reach in the bag. There's more where that one came from. There's the illusion that Broadway can break its heart. And here's one in the classy, all-plastic 1950 model, laboratory tested. The illusion that Broadway can shed a tear. That's the one you'll want for the murder of a sick soldier boy, for the girl of his heart and his dreams. A song of a girl with sightless eyes. Hug it close to you, kid, because it's fragile.
Danny! Danny? What's the matter? You look sick. No, it's something different from sick. Danny, can I get you a glass of water or something?
What do you want, Tartaglia?
I just want you shouldn't look like that.
What else do you want, Tartaglia?
Oh, Danny, come on, don't be like that. I know how upset you are because of the boy, because of how they tried to kill that blind girl. I don't figure it, Danny. If they wanted to kill her, why did they tell her to get protection?
Maybe it wasn't her they wanted to kill.
No? Then that means it was... Danny, I got it. The killer set it up that way because it was you he wanted to kill. Hey, Danny, we gotta do something.
Answer the phone, Tartaglia.
What? Oh, yeah, Danny. Danny Clover's office. Sergeant Tartaglia speaking. What? Yeah, right away. Danny.
What was it?
That was Dan Tobin, desk sergeant at the 29th Precinct. They got Fred Owen. He gave himself up. He's confessed to the murder of Jimmy Hunt. Hey, Danny, take your overcoat. You'll catch your death of cold.
Fred Owen? You killed a man, huh, Owen? You killed Jimmy Hunt. Why?
Killed him?
Tell me about it. That's why you came here, wasn't it? You want to tell someone about it. Tell me.
You?
I'm Danny Clover. I'm a policeman.
I'll tell you. You're a policeman. You'll make me suffer for what I did to Jimmy. I killed him. I've got to suffer for it. I've got to feel what Jimmy felt.
Take it easy, Owen. Just tell me how you did it.
With the knife?
With the knife. Go ahead.
Mr. Clover, did it hurt him much?
I don't think so.
I cut up his food for him so he could feed himself. So he wouldn't have to use a knife. The doctor always warned me not to let Jimmy use a knife. The doctor was afraid that Jimmy would do what he did do.
Huh? What did he do, Owen?
I was feeding him, and then I suddenly remembered something I had to do.
Yeah, what?
Something I forgot. It wouldn't have happened. It didn't have to happen.
And you remembered. Is that when you stabbed him?
As if it had been with my own hands. Jimmy liked me to read to him while he was eating. And I forgot to bring a book, and so I left to get it. I left Jimmy with a knife. With a knife?
Are you trying to tell me that Jimmy killed himself when you left him alone with a knife?
As if it had been with my own hands, I killed him. It was my fault that Jimmy's dead. My fault. I killed him. I killed him just as surely as if I plunged the knife in him.
I tried to break through the wall of tears he'd built around himself, but it was no good. I tried to ask him about Virginia's letters. He didn't know anything about them, he said. It was another lash of the whip he held over himself. I finally broke his heart by releasing him from the dismal, bitter shadows of the cell he begged for. Then I took a long walk in the cold, unspoiled air. Then I knew I had to get back to it. The third name on the visitor's list was Madge Taylor, whose address was a brownstone between other brownstones on West 53rd. I climbed the steps that led to its doors with the cracked, stained glass. Yeah, Madge Taylor. Is she here?
Come in, man. Come in. You want me to freeze?
You're Madge Taylor?
Yeah. Right in there. What the old battle axe that runs this flat don't know won't hurt her. Anyway, it's cuddlier with the door closed, huh, man? Such a nasty draft in that hallway.
Madge, I'm Danny Clover of the police.
Huh? Let's have a drink on it, shall we, Danny?
They tell me you visited a man in the hospital, a man named Jimmy Hunt. Friend of yours?
Oh,
funny what I said?
It kills me. I thought you were... All you want to know is, did I murder Jimmy Hunt? Isn't that it?
Why did you visit him?
I'll tell you why. You see me, how I am. Charge it up to Jimmy Hunt. Send him the bill.
You were in love with Jimmy Hunt?
The lieutenant? The Wonder Boy with the loose marbles? Are you kidding? I never saw him in my life till I found out he was brain sick in that hospital.
Well, I don't...
I'll draw you a diagram. I was in love once with a kid. Soldier kid. My husband. Lieutenant Jimmy Hunt killed him. Killed me, too, at the same time. Because the lieutenant thought it was dandy kids should be killed. This the lieutenant liked. You still want to know why I visited?
No. No, Madge, I heard it once. When you saw him, did he have any letters?
How would I know? All I care about Jimmy Hunt is that he should die. Slow, slow, a long time dying.
Yeah. Stick around, Madge. Don't go away.
You out of your mind? I love it here. I never had it so good. It's a free ride on a roller coaster, man.
Danny. Hey, I got news for you.
Yeah? What is it?
There's a guy in your office waiting for you.
Who is he?
Name Scott. Says he has a daughter named Virginia Scott. Hey, ain't that the girl? Danny?
Your name, Scott?
It is. And you're Danny Clover. Virginia described you to me. Don't look surprised, Mr. Clover. My daughter is a perceptive girl.
Nothing about Virginia surprises me, Mr. Scott. Except the fact that she has a father. I didn't know that before.
Because Virginia didn't want you to know.
She'd have a reason for that, Mr. Scott.
It's all bound up with the kind of person she is. Her love for people who love her. The reason why she insisted on living alone without me. The reason why she didn't want me mixed up in this affair.
She thinks you had a motive for killing Jimmy?
She knows I did. That's why I'm here. Perhaps you would never have found out. But that's why I'm here. To tell you I had a motive for killing Jimmy.
Which was what?
I hated that boy. Hated him for what he was, for what he could do to people. His arrogance, his snobbishness, the play acting he did to cover his cowardice. By his very existence, Jimmy Hunt was a liar.
And mostly you resented his making love to your daughter.
Yes. My daughter is blind. Whatever she can do on her own, sew and cook and turn on lights and dial a telephone, it doesn't alter the fact Virginia is blind. It's her burden. She didn't deserve another awful one like Jimmy Hunt. A sick boy who willed himself sick.
Virginia knew you felt this way?
She knew I was prepared to kill Jimmy that very day.
But you didn't. Is that what you're telling me?
That very day, I went to the ward to kill him. That's what was on my mind to do. When an attendant saw me, asked me my business there. When I couldn't answer him properly, he made me leave. No, I didn't kill Jimmy. But there's this.
There's what?
I'm glad he's dead.
He got up and walked away, and I let him. But because I'm a cop, I had a man follow him. Because I'm a cop, I had a check on his story. Whether he had actually left the ward the morning Jimmy Hunt was killed. That meant I had to talk to Fred Owen, the attendant. I called the hospital, and they told me Owen hadn't showed up, but as far as they knew, he was home. So that's where I went, too, to the home of Fred Owen. His landlady was a kind woman.
Fred will be right back, Mr. Clover. Would you like to wait in his room?
Yeah.
Next room down on your right.
Thanks. I'll find my way.
Wait, I'll go with you. Turn on the fire. You know, sometimes it gets cold in here in Fred's room. I can't understand it. Nice gas fireplace like this, and Fred likes to sit here in the cold. There. Don't that make a nice fire?
Yeah, cozy. Yeah, this is a real cozy room.
Yeah, Fred decorated it himself. I allow him to hang pictures. Lots of landladies don't allow hanging pictures.
Nice pictures. All girls.
It's a man's privilege.
Girls with veils over their eyes. Girls with their eyes closed. Sightless girls.
Yes, here's one with a man on it with a girl, holding his hands over her eyes like he's going to surprise her. That's Fred. Oh, hello, Fred. I was just telling Mr. Clover.
I'm happy you're here, Mr. Clover. I'll make some coffee.
Thanks, but I don't care for any, Fred.
But I just leave you two gentlemen alone. I know how gentlemen like to talk sometimes without ladies.
You like my room, Mr. Clover?
Yeah, I was just admiring your pictures.
Yes, I like them too.
But all these girls, their eyes are covered. They can't see you.
I know. Some men hang pictures of girls. Well, you know, because that's the kind of men they are.
What kind are you, Fred?
I'm an ugly kind of a man. My face, I mean. I know I am. Girls never look at me on the street, even when I stare at them and set my mind that they should look at me. They look away even when I talk to them.
Virginia doesn't, does she?
No. No, when she comes to the hospital and I say good morning to her, she smiles and talks right to me.
And when she doesn't come to the hospital, she writes you, doesn't she, Fred?
Oh, yes, of course she does, because she loves me. Maybe you don't believe that, Mr. Clover. But I'll show you.
Here.
This will show you she loves me. Her letters to me. Go ahead, take one of them out of the envelope and read it. I'm not ashamed of our love.
Yeah. She loves you, all right, Fred. But look, look at this.
Yeah?
You've crossed Jimmy's name out wherever it's mentioned and written in your own.
Well, of course I did. But don't you see, Virginia's very clever. She wrote those letters to Jimmy, but she knew I'd get them. I knew Virginia wanted it like that. And Jimmy... Jimmy was sick, you know. He thought Virginia really meant them for him.
So you stabbed him. You really did kill him, didn't you?
Oh, I had to. He was getting worse and worse about Virginia all the time.
Why didn't you tell me that when I talked to you in the cell, Fred?
Well, because I'm clever, too.
Yes, you are. That was a clever trap you set for me in Virginia's apartment.
No, you're wrong. I wasn't clever then. You got away.
Put down that knife, Fred.
It won't hurt Mr. Clover. Didn't hurt Jimmy. You said it didn't. Now give me my letters. I don't want blood on Virginia's letter.
Here are your letters, Fred.
The letters! You threw them in the fire! The letters are they're burning! Help me! Help me get my letters! I can't touch them! Help me! Help me, will you, or I'll kill you!
You need help, Fred. Help you need this first. He lay there, his body taut, as if unwilling to accept what was happening to him. His mouth hung open in disbelief, and the spasm in his fingertips groped for the fireplace and the ashes of his letters. But the final, the complete rejection was in his eyes, open and staring at me, empty of passion, of insanity even. Cold and empty, his eyes staring and sightless. Broadway's having itself a time. It's cocky and it's needling people a step over the line. It's making a big muscle and daring the nighttime. Before it's over, it'll gouge chunks out of itself and laugh at its own agony. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover and is written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin.
Broadway is My Beat, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 3rd of February, 1950 on CBS. The conductor of the Broadway's My Beat theme song was Wilbur Hatch, penning many scores during radio's yesteryear, most notably for another CBS mystery show, The Whistler. You are listening to an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Now time for a broadcast of Mystery House, produced by WGN Chicago and broadcast nationwide on the Mutual Network. This episode called Death at Deadline. And a producer's note, there is some crosstalk in this episode, but still intelligible for a good story next. First turn on August 26th, 1945.
Mystery House, that strange publishing firm owned by Dan and Barbara Glenn, where each new novel is acted out by the Mystery House staff before it is accepted for publication. Mystery House.
All right, everybody in your places. Set the scene, Guy.
Death at Deadline. Tonight's story opens in the private office of Luke Chilton, managing editor of The Star. One of his reporters, Pamela Carter, enters to announce an unwelcome caller.
You have a caller, Luke.
Oh, yes, Pamela. I'm busy as the devil right now, making the dummy on page one.
The same old caller, Luke.
You don't mean Jim Boland.
The same.
He always comes when I'm busy and he knows I'm doing well.
I'll tell him you're not in.
No, that won't do. He knows I'm in.
Look, Luke, why not give him the bum's rush? Just because he was a reporter on The Star and you fired
him? Oh, it's not that I'm soft, Pam. I feel sorry for the guy. He could have been a good reporter if he...
If he hadn't had a heart full of larceny. Why, you'd have lost your own job if you'd let him get away with the kind of shakedowns he was pulling. No respectable paper.
I know. Show him in.
You are too soft, Luke.
He'll see you, Jim.
Thanks. Oh, don't run on my account, Pammy.
Hello, Jim.
Busy as a little bumblebee, aren't you, Luke?
I am busy, Jim. And I'm a little hard up. $10 is just about all I can spare.
Skip it, Luke. Surprise. I'm not after money tonight.
No?
No. I've been thinking things over, and I've decided to come back to work for the Star.
I'm sorry, Jim. You're a good reporter, but after what happened... Well, it was blackmail, Jim. You suppressed the story for money. The whole staff knew about it. If I'd put you back on, I'd lose the respect of everybody in the plant.
I always liked the Star.
If you're ready to get down to business and do a good reporting job, there's no reason why you can't get back to work. But not on this newspaper.
But it's on the Star I want to work for, Luke. You don't seem to understand.
I'm sorry, Jim.
Look, I've decided to go back on the Star. And if you're smart, you'll take me.
I told you I can't, Jim.
If you don't, you'll be making a big mistake.
Then it's a mistake I'll have to make.
I'm giving you a chance, Luke.
You're giving me a chance. Now listen here.
That's what I said. You fired me. I took my spanking like a little man. But I've decided the period of punishment's over. I'm back.
No, you are not.
You with your pious talk of blackmail. You know why you fired me just as well as I do. Do you think I ever fell for that blackmail gag?
That was the truth, Fred.
You fired me because you're in love with Pam Carter and you thought I was in the way.
You can't talk to me like that and get away with it.
I can't talk that way because you don't like to hear the truth. I was running you a close race with Pam till you fired
me. Get out of here. I don't have to put up with this kind of talk. You've no right in here.
No right in the Star? Why? Because I was fired by you. But you're going to hire me again.
You're wrong, Jim. Dead wrong. Now get out of here. I'll have some of the boys throw you out.
I'm getting back under the Star, back where Pam is. Back where I can straighten things out with her. And if I can't do it because you're here, I'll have to see that you're not here.
You, think you can get my job? Right ahead and try.
I'm not talking about your job, Luke. I'm talking about you. I can get rid of you so easy you wouldn't believe it. Permanently.
Well, another day, another dollar. I'm heading for home and a little shut-eye.
I'll buy a cup of coffee if you'll wait for me.
No, thanks. I need to sleep. You'll stick around here till the first edition's off the press, and that means another half-hour kill. In the words of the old song, I'm tired and I want to go to bed.
Well, don't say I didn't offer. Good night, Pam.
Good night, Lou. Oh, by the way, did Jim Boland make another touch?
No. This time he demanded his job back.
Demanded his job back?
Yeah.
Why, he must be crazy.
Made all kinds of threats.
I don't see why you put up with him. Well, see you tomorrow.
Right, Pam. Might as well get out some notes to the city editor on the wire desk.
Yeah.
You want to see me?
You're Luke Chittle, ain't you?
That's right.
Then I want to see you.
Have a chair.
I'll stand up, thanks. I talk better on my feet.
What do you want?
I'm Jeff Corklin.
Oh, yes. We've had a few stories about you, Mr. Corklin. But I never had the pleasure of meeting him.
It ain't gonna be any pleasure for you, Chilton.
Huh?
No. I got a tip you're letting loose on me in tomorrow morning's paper.
Then you've been misinformed, Corklin. Not that it wouldn't be a pleasure to have a story on you.
You got it, all right.
If you'd oblige me with the facts, I'd be happy to print it.
Don't try to bluff me, Chilton. You're blowing me wide open with a story about my gambling joint.
You're wrong. If I ever get the chance, I will. But you don't figure in tomorrow's news. Not yet, at any rate.
I'll believe you when I see the paper.
Well, you won't have to wait long. The boy should bring me a copy in a couple of minutes.
I'll wait.
Who told you there was going to be a story about you?
That's none of your business.
But I'm afraid it is. The people on this paper are telling outsiders about me.
Oh, it wasn't anybody who works for you. I know how you feel about that. I got the same kind of trouble. Rats that give tip-offs.
Pardon me. Here's your paper, Mr. Chilton.
Thanks, Billy. You can beat it now.
Okay. Good night, Mr. Chilton.
Good night. Yeah, there it is, Corklin. Look it over.
Is it on the front page?
I told you there isn't any story about you. You can start with the front page if you like.
All right. You know, the papers seem kind of dead without the war news anymore. A nice murder, huh? Say, I'll want to spend some time reading that one.
Professional interest?
Yeah. Hey, what's this? What are you trying to pull?
Pull? I don't get you.
This story about me, right in the bottom of the front page.
About you? There's nothing...
Now? You think I can't read? Jeff Corklin, number one hoodlum and gangster, is through. Tomorrow, the Star begins a sensational expose of his operations, naming names, dates, and places. The Star today accuses Jeff Corklin of crimes ranging from crooked gambling to murder. All of these charges will be substantiated in future articles. Files on Corklin have been built up over a period of months, and all the Star's information will be turned over to any authorities who are interested. Today, the
Star... Let me see that paper.
So you didn't know nothing about it, huh?
I never saw the story before in my life.
What do you think you're talking to, a sap?
Somebody's been playing tricks around here. Just a minute.
Make a move for that phone and I'll drill you.
I just want to call the composing room. I've got to find out where that story came from.
You know where it came from, all right.
I tell you, I don't...
Okay, wise guy. Take a look at all this information you say you got.
I don't have any information.
No lie! Think you're going to send me to the pen without my even raising a finger? Let's have it, Chilton.
I don't have a thing, I tell you.
Oh, no? Not much. You'd put yourself right out on a limb like you do in that story if you didn't have proof. Come across.
That story never came out of this office.
I'm getting kind of tired of listening to that kind of guff, Chilton. You ain't playing with a little boy. I mean business.
Fool. Put down that gun.
Get me that proof you're yelping about or I'll blast your head off. Now, where's the stuff hid?
Look around if you won't believe me.
I'll look around all right.
There's nothing here. I'll argue you keep me from calling the composing room, the more papers are going out.
You see, you got me right on the spot, don't you? Dope on a murder rap, huh?
I don't know a thing about it.
Somebody spilled it for you. One of my boys. Think you got me cold, huh? Well, let me tell you something, wise boy. I got you cold, too. This joint's deserted. Even the office boys left. Must be close to 3 o'clock in the morning. Nobody on the streets. I can get away from here plenty easy. And I can fix up an alibi. Now, either you give me that information or I'm going to blow you right off of the map.
You fool, you've got to believe me.
I believe you, all right. I believe what you wrote in the paper. It says right at the top of the page, if you read it in the Star, it's so. And plenty of other people will believe it, too.
What have I got to do to convince you that I don't know anything about it?
You couldn't do it, sonny boy. First, I get a tip from a guy who knows what you're doing. He says certain things. I come here and what he says checks. Everything checks except you.
Okay, so Malaya. No use arguing with you. What do you want me to do?
Give me all that proof you say you got about me.
But I don't have a thing.
I'm getting kind of tired mucking around with you. Either come across before I count to three or I'm going to blast you. One, two...
Now listen to me. Who gave you the tip? That might be important.
A guy used to work for you. Still a friend of yours. A guy who spends a lot of time with you.
Who?
Jim Boland.
But he doesn't know a thing about what's going on around here.
You sure know about that story. Come on, you're stalling for time. One... Two? All right, wise guy.
You fool. You've been framed. You're the worst fall guy than the...
Jim Boland.
Yeah. Where do you think you're going, Cortland?
You ain't big enough to stop me, Boland. You...
I wouldn't reach for your gun if I were you, Cortland. I won't hesitate to kill you, and you're covered before you even get started.
You dirty, you rat. You were the guy who tipped me off.
Sure, I was the one. And I knew what you'd do, too.
What's the big idea?
You thought I was working with you, didn't you, Cortland? Well, I wasn't. I'll take your gun, if you don't mind.
No.
I said I'll take it. Thanks.
You tipped me off in a story. You told me how long to wait before I came up here so I'd get to talk to Chilton alone. Now you're trying to turn me in. What's it all about?
Maybe I'll tell you sometime, Corkland. Right now, I think I'd better call the police. Hello? Oh, Riley? Riley, this is Jim Boland over at the Star. Bring over a couple of good strong boys. Yeah, I've got a murderer for you, and he's a little tough to handle. Oh, no, I'm not joking.
I said a murderer, and that's exactly what I mean. Right. Goodbye.
Why, you dirty double-crosser.
Stand back, Parkland. There's nothing I like any better than to shoot you.
You mean you were working on the Star all this time?
Sure. You know, Luke had an idea that no reporter could get the goods on Corklin because the Hoods had every newspaper man in town spotted. So we planted that blackmail story about me and I got fired. At least that's what everybody thought.
But you really were fired.
You mean I was taken off the payroll? Sure. Luke was afraid there would be some leaks in the office, so he really did it up brown. That's why I came in to borrow money from him so often. He was giving me the full amount of my check every week, and then he was going to get the money back from the paper once we broke with the story.
But he seemed so convincing. I really thought...
I know. Yeah, good old Luke. He could put on a good act when he had to.
But he didn't even tell me.
Pam, honey, that was one thing he really felt bad about.
Not being able to tell me?
No, about making me look bad to you. He figured he'd sort of broken things up between us. Said the first thing he was going to do after the story broke was square me with you.
But Luke and I were in love with each other. We were going to get married.
That bothered him too, honey. He said he was afraid you'd fallen for him and that, well, he just wasn't the marrying kind.
But that's not true.
Try not to be sore at him, Pammy. He was putting on a show to get a whale of a big story. He was a newspaper man.
But what happened to the story? What happened to all the information about Corklin? The documents and things?
Corklin got him, of course. But the cops can't figure out how he got him out of the place unless he had one of his boys with him and sent him out before he shot Luke.
Oh, Officer Riley.
Hi, Riley. Corklin broke him down, told you where he ditched the papers yet?
No, but he's done better than that. He's confessed to another murder.
Another murder?
The foreman of the Star Composing Room, Herman Schultz. Seems kind of funny, Schultz leaving that note that had been called out of town right when a murder was taking place.
But why would he kill the composing room foreman?
Yeah.
He says he went to this Schultz and asked him to keep the story out of the paper. Schultz wouldn't do it. So he got him outside and killed him. He was planning on going back into the composing room then and taking the story out himself. He didn't know how to unlock the page for him.
Did he tell you where the body is?
No, worse luck. That's what's burning me up. He tells us he's killed this Schultz, and then he sits and laughs at us and says it's up to us to find the body. And we can't do nothing about it till we find the cops.
That's right. You can't, can you?
Here she is, but make it snappy.
Hello, Miss Carter.
Hello.
Listen, Copper, what are you standing around for? I said I wanted to talk to the lady alone.
All right. But no tricks now.
Well, Mr. Corklin?
Is that gag of yours about my killing the composing room foreman working?
Right. The police have finally started looking for Herman Schultz.
You know, it's kind of funny how things work out.
What do you mean?
Why, here you are hating me for killing your sweetheart and wanting revenge. And I hate Jim Bolin and want revenge. And the only way we can both get what we want is by working together.
Somehow, Mr. Corklin, I don't hate you as much as I did at first.
You believe my story about what happened, huh?
I know it's true. Jim Bolin is just as guilty of killing Luke as if he'd pulled the trigger.
It was that story.
And everything depends on my hunch that Jim Bolin planted that story, then tipped you off.
I was crazy sore when I seen it in the Star. Being in print like that meant I was all through. I lost my head.
Which was exactly what you were supposed to do. If the police would just find the composing room foreman's body.
Baby, you don't even know he's dead.
He has to be. The only way Jim could have planted that story was through Herman Schultz. And he couldn't risk letting Schultz live.
The guy left a note saying he was going away.
But the note was typewritten.
Bolin's girlier than me, but you can't touch him.
If we could just find the body.
There may not even be a body.
There is, somewhere. Cortland,
I've just got to make Jim Boland pay for killing Luke.
Sure like to help you with that job.
I'll get Jim Boland. Somehow. Some way.
You know, baby, when you grit your teeth like that, I'd give you a job in my mob. If I was out.
There. Well, we're through for tonight, Sam. Going home?
No, and I wish you'd stay a few minutes, Jim.
Why?
I just called Officer Riley.
What for?
I got some new evidence on Luke's murder.
Look, honey, I wish you'd forget that murder business. It's all settled. They got Corklin cold. What more do you want?
There's still Herman Schultz.
You know something? I don't believe Schultz is even dead. I think Corklin used his disappearance to mess things up. He knows they won't go to trial till they find Schultz's body.
That's a very interesting theory. It shows you don't know the facts.
What do you mean?
You'll see. Oh, there's Riley now.
I come as fast as I could, Miss Carter. What's this all about, anyway?
I want you to put Jim Boland under arrest, Officer Riley.
What? Oh, you're joking.
I was never more serious in my life.
Sam, what's this all about? It's your idea of a joke. It's in rotten taste.
It's not a joke. Do you think I believed you when you said Luke wasn't really in love with me?
Oh, so you're sure about that?
I never believed it for a minute. You hated Luke because he fired you, because I loved him instead of you, for a lot of reasons. You decided to kill him, but you didn't have the nerve to do it yourself, and you were much too clever for that anyway.
Oh, Pam, please, don't be so melodramatic.
You tipped Jeff Corklin off that Luke was going to run an expose of Corklin's racket. You told Corklin to come in after the deadline, when there wouldn't be anyone else in the office.
That's a beautiful story.
And a true one. Then you wrote that story about Corklin, a threat to expose his whole setup.
Look, I wasn't even supposed to be working on the paper. I'd have had fun getting a story published, wouldn't I?
That's where I'm going to get you, Jim. You had to enlist Herman Schultz's aid to get that story into the Star. You told him some lie, probably that Luke had ordered it in. Once that story was locked up in the page form, you sealed Luke's death warrant.
That's a nice theory, Pam, but you don't have an ounce of proof for it.
But I do have proof. I got the original copy of that Corklin news story, and it wasn't typed on Luke.
Is that right now?
Which doesn't prove much either, does it?
I had a friend of mine break into your apartment, Jim. The type on your typewriter checks with the typing in the story.
So what?
So what? It means that you wrote the story.
Well, what if it does?
You killed Luke. Got Corklin to come in to see him. You timed it so he'd get there just before the paper came out with that story.
What if I did? You can't hang a thing on me. I'm legally in the clear. Jeff Corklin admitted killing Luke Chilton. He did it. There's no argument there. You can't do a thing to me.
That's what I wanted to hear you say, Jim. You contemptible...
Luke had it coming to him, but I didn't kill him.
You think you're awfully clever, don't you?
Clever enough so that I wasn't going to involve myself in murder, and I didn't. I got what I wanted without taking any risk.
You're forgetting one thing, Jim.
I didn't forget anything.
You're forgetting the murder of Herman Schultz, remember?
But he wasn't murdered,
Oh, yes, he was. Corklin confessed to that one, too.
Corklin lies. He's using that as a straw to...
Oh, hello, Joe. Got the first edition for it?
Yes, he's got it right here.
Thanks.
Herman Schultz isn't dead.
Take a look at the front page of the Star, Jim.
Let me see. Police find body of Star Foreman. Body of Herman Schultz, Star Composing Ring Foreman, was found late last night by the police, a bullet in his temple. The police were baffled by the fact that the bullet was not from the gun of Jeff Corklin, who had previously confessed to the murder.
That puts a different light on things now. You were holding a gun on Corklin when you called me over here to get him. I'd like to be taking a look at that gun, Boland. Maybe the ballistics department would be interested, too.
It's a frame-up. I didn't kill Herman Schultz.
I'd like to see that gun, Boland.
Better let him have it, Jim.
No, you're blaming me. You did this to him, Pam. You did it.
That's right, Jim. Blame everyone but yourself.
Hand over that gun, Boland.
All right. Sure, I'll give it to you. I'll give it.
Try shoot at me, will you? Why, you dirty...
I didn't kill him. I didn't kill anybody.
I had to do it. Now to check his revolver against the body. You know, it's funny they didn't tell me over at the station about finding that body with me working on a case like I did.
There isn't anybody, Riley.
What? No body? But it says right here in the paper.
I know. That's the second time lately the paper's had a phony story. I thought there was a body, and I was hunting for it. I discovered that Jim had paid Herman Schultz to put that story about Corcoran in the paper. Paid him plenty. Schultz was hiding in Jim's apartment till this thing blew over.
But if Schultz was hiding in Boland's apartment, then Boland knew he wasn't dead.
Last night, I asked Jim if I could borrow his revolver. Said I'd been scared lately since Luke's murder. He let me take it. Early this evening, I returned it to him with one bullet fired. When he saw that story, he thought I'd framed him, just as he framed Luke. He could see the police checking the bullet and finding it came from his gun. It never occurred to him that the story in the Star was another fake.
It may have been a fake, but it sure got results.
Yes, I took care of things for me. I suppose I should be. No, not enough. Oh, that.
Mystery House, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 26th, 1945 on Mutual. And that brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.